You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Because I'm staying with Dave. His is a nice toy hauler. You saw it.
Yeah. But
it's probably one of the cheapest ones in here. They're all like the Prevost buses and like sick rigs in here.
Jeez. What part of the country are you in right now?
Mississippi? No, Louisiana. Louisiana. We're in Biloxi. We're in Biloxi, Mississippi right now.
That's what I was going to ask, man. I was like, he said he's at the casino. Yeah, man, I spent a lot of time down there.
Just lost $100.
That sucks.
Nah, man, that's what I planned on doing. It was entertainment money. We just played until we lost it, and we just saw who could last the longest. He lasted longer than me, so whatever. Every 4 years, I might throw $100 at it just to remember why I don't gamble.
I got you.
That's why we got jobs, man. Where you at?
I'm at the house in Kennedy, Alabama. I mean, we're in the same time zone. I didn't even think to ask you that. I figured y'all would have been heading back to Colorado.
I like your method of timekeeping, though. Like, I'll call you an hour before so you can get your shit together.
Yeah.
And I'll call you. And that's it. And that's the way my life works, man. It's last minute Larry.
Yeah, they're just all learning, right?
I mean, I feel like that's how you get opportunities, too. If you don't book everything in advance and you leave it all open, maybe you book the first night in a hostel or something. But, I mean, I like to just kind of figure it out on the way. And people are like, oh, I think, you know, this is a good thing. Or, you know, maybe you can come over here or whatever.
Right.
Usually the opportunities will present themselves. But if you're already booked for a week, you can't just side venture to go and hang out with this, you know, guy or girl or bunch of people that happen to be. Case in point, I just went to Cozumel with my buddy and we booked an Airbnb, and then somebody on Facebook texted me like, oh, I'm in Cancun, stop by, you know. And I was like, yeah, man, let's stop by. To the guy I was with, he was not down. He was just like, no, we gotta go check in. And I'm like, oh, I hate doing this.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you travel with other people, a lot of times you have to plan ahead a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah, man, totally. Sound level is good. If you're ready to get started, I am.
Yeah.
How you do? Something like this.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and tonight I'm burning the phone lines with RJ Williams. We met over the weekend in Corinth. We were both vendors. We were selling different wares, and we met over a smoke break or something.
The smoking section, he said to me.
That's it.
Because I was just trying to get a little vitamin D in my life because I had a booth inside the venue.
Yeah,
and we outside, were. And here's these guys with their van, with their pop-up, and they're selling antique stuff, and they got beer game, super deep beer game on these guys, so we chopped up a little bit over a smoke, and I'm a Colorado guy, so, you know, we got down on a little God's green earth, because there's medicine.
Row tide. To that,
there's healing.
I believe in
so
it.
So we had a managerial meeting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one thing led to another. So here we are.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, as we were, and I watched you and, I'm blanking, Dave. I got to see both of y'all sales pitches in there, and it's, man, I was like. And that was the comment that, you know, that other vendors were saying, like to us, is if you get a chance, go in there and watch the guy selling the Swiffer and the guy selling the Euro Whip. If you want to learn anything about selling something, they can do a demonstration and just immediately sell these guys.
Well, that's a pretty awesome compliment coming third hand, you know, through another vendor. That's definitely, that's awesome, man. I mean, I've been doing this 15 years, but I mean, I was raised by my mom. My dad was not there. So she was a real, salesperson. She was just a survivor.
Yeah.
And so she would teach me just by being around her, how to manipulate people. And so here's the dichotomy. You think, and the reason why I haven't really sold my sales training, because I've always struggled with, am I teaching people how to rip somebody off and take advantage of someone else?
Yeah.
And so I have been very hesitant to teach people to do what I do. But the last couple of years, I have come to this conclusion. Sales, okay, let's back up. In making facial expressions and hand gestures and smiles and intonation fluctuations, you're putting in effort that you would not put in if there were no people around, correct?
Absolutely.
So if I'm doing this as a service to someone else, my goal in that activity is to make them feel more comfortable and to like me, correct?
That's how we get ourselves.
So that's what we do in life. We are acting. If you meet someone who is way more educated than you and they talk in jargon, you're going to feel left out.
Yeah.
So an emotionally intelligent person, a person with a high EQ, will recognize where you're at and come to you and be kindred with you. And that sales is establishing that rapport and saying, hey, I'm a human being and you're a human being. We both take shits. We both pull our pants up the same way every morning.
That's right.
I don't care if you're the president or if you're homeless. Like, we're all human beings. That's sales. And so I've come to the conclusion that, you know, it's okay to teach other people how to do this if they don't have it born into them. Because let's face it, there's some born innate salespeople, and there's some people that need to be taught, but
right.
Anybody can do it. It's just a matter of learning the responses to, you know, different people's needs. So if I'm making someone more comfortable and then educating them about some product that I feel is in their best interests, if I can put it succinctly and make it make sense so that they get into that product for $20, then I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
As long as you're not using this power for evil and trying to get over on people and not do what you say you're going to do and lie.
Yeah.
Because a lot of salespeople lie, and that's why we got a bad rap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But realistically, if you can find a good product that's good quality and it is good for people, you're just basically showing them to the light. It's like a missionary, you know, they're showing people to the way to heaven. And, you know, just kind of an analogy, like you're leading people to something that's good.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm a missionary for the Eurowhip.
I hear you, man. Just to hit a level with that is, you know, we sell these beard oils and balms. We make this stuff. And, we do, soaps, candles, and we have other wares that we sell, but, you know, a lot of these guys, they'll be like young teenagers, and they'll ask, hey, I've heard that these oils and balms will promote beard growth, and I was like, I don't sell miracles, Bubba.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hit a level with you. If you have a beard, it'll help you. If you don't, it ain't gonna help you there.
Yeah, people ask me if it'll work with almond milk, and it really only works with cow's milk. I'm not telling them no. And I could just say yes. They're never going to see me again, and most likely they're not going to call into the warranty because I lied to them, but I'm not going to lie to them because it ain't worth me coming back as a pig next time to get $20.
Right.
It's just not.
Right.
Sorry. I believe in reincarnation. I believe in karma. I also believe that the American dream is real, and you don't need a
that,
education.
Yeah. That right there, dude. That right here. There. Yeah. That is what I had in my mind when you agreed to come on the show. That was what I wanted to name it, was R.J. Williams on the American Dream, because you caught me out there in the van just eating a bag of Doritos, and you just like, what are you doing, man? The American Dream is real. You out there eating Cheetos? And I was like, he's right.
We're living it, man.
Yeah.
How many people that you know that you went to college with are slaving away 24/7 on their iPhones, being a lawyer or being a insurance claims agent or being something looked up to high, or like a dent. I got a friend who's a dentist. I mean, they slave away 9 to 5. The government takes 40% of their shit. No, you know, discounts, no write-offs, no small business stuff that we can do. I mean, they're slaving away, and I thank God for them, because when I look around this world, I see 100 million things that I have no idea how they work, but I appreciate the benefits of the technology, whether it's medical or me driving a diesel truck across the country at 100 miles an hour with a trailer behind me.
Uh-huh.
That is just fantastic.
Yeah,
and
man.
If I was transported 300 years in the past, I probably wouldn't be able to tell them how this shit works or help them in any way to get to where we're at.
Yeah.
And I feel bad about that. Medically, I know nothing.
Yeah.
You know, mechanical engineering, I'm a salesman. I do one thing and I do it well. But I think that's probably the most important thing to take away is, in life, you have to focus. If you're the jack of one thing and everything else is, you just pick something and stick with it. People that switch too much, even if it's boring, just stick with it and get really good at it and make money with that thing and get it tightened down so much that you can just, you know, for like my business, I work 3 months out of the year. The rest of the time, I fuck off.
Yeah, we were talking about that. So, man, let's start here, man. Tell me a little bit about where you were born and raised, and, man, what was life like then?
I was born in Rochester, New York, in the inner city. My neighbors were all pretty much minorities or really poor. I didn't know it, but I thought we were rich compared to my neighbors. I went around as a little child with a penny jar offering them money, and it actually offended some of the black families around, you know, because my friends were Jamal and this kid Ben that couldn't control his bowels, so he's just running around just pooping his pants all the time.
Yeah.
And I was a very sickly child. I had lactose intolerance, I had allergies, I had pre-diabetes, I had asthma, but I already mentioned that one.
Mm.
And so I had to have allergy shots every week, one in each arm. I had asthma attacks all the time. I was not athletic. I was deaf until I was 3 years old. And it was one of those, mom saw that I wasn't screaming at the parade when the fire truck went by type of deals. And they wondered why I was speaking gibberish. So I got my ears fixed when I was 3. And then I started to learn how to talk.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit delayed. My father was... Okay, so my mom was a young Catholic schoolgirl dying to get out of the house. They wouldn't let her go to college. The only way out of the house was to get married, and she wanted to get the hell out of there because they were so domineering. First generation Italian, you know, just real strict. And she married my dad, who was a fun party guy, recording studio artist. He rubbed elbows with celebrities and recorded these guys, whatever. He was fun. He brought her to party. He brought her to the Emmys, this, that, you know, like big stuff.
Yeah.
And his family's just millionaires and admiral and brain surgeons and really, really good, you know, genetics there. So they got together. He was probably 18. She was 16. Parents consented. They got married early. He was the knight in shining armor, super fun, super dapper. But then when they got married, he turned into this total hypocrite. He turned into a mean, abusive, scary Southern Baptist, like just total hypocrisy and scary shit.
Yeah.
So the first 8 years of my life was traumatic and scary and beatings and just weird, you know, Southern Baptist, anyway, cultish stuff. And then we got the hell out of there. They split up, and my mom made up for it the next 10 years of my life until I went away to college. It was, you can do whatever you want. Nothing can stop you. You're the best. Whatever. I always was encouraged. And my mom was a private investigator. She was a super savvy lady.
Yeah.
She was one of those. She'd be on the phone with somebody from church. She'd be like, oh, hi, Sally. And then she'd be like, you fat, you know, and then just back and forth. Like, she could really act. So I grew up around her. And then we moved probably 7 times. I was a real klepto when I was a child. It was born in me. I don't know why. I remember when I was crawling, I was stealing my cousin's toys and sticking them in my gosh, you know, pockets.
Yeah.
That early. And it took me going to jail in order to learn my lesson. But I was shooting for, I wanted to be the president of the United States of America, go to the Air Force Academy, and by gosh, I did it. I came first in my class. I ended up going to the Air Force Academy, but then...
Are you still in Rochester at this time?
No, I moved from Rochester out to Colorado to go to the Air Force Academy. So I'm in Colorado, 18 years old. I went there, brightest and the best. I had an amazing future ahead of me. I was on track, political science, to be the president. That's what I wanted to do. My mom told me I could do anything, and I believed it. So then I stole when I was there, and it just, I don't know, something turned me on about it. It made me feel powerful, and it wasn't like I needed it. Everything was taken care of. I just wanted to get over. I don't know why, but I made some mistakes there, and they ended up court-martialing me and throwing me in like Leavenworth. It was another prison, but same deal. Military prison, almost a year.
Yeah.
Came out of there like, oh my God, I am a, you know, then I had to be on parole for a year. And so then I'm released on the world.
Yeah.
I went into there 155 pounds. I came out 225, monster. And I hadn't seen myself in 7 months. So I looked in the mirror. When I got to the airport, they dropped me off at, and I was like, oh my God, wow, this is awesome. That was huge and smart. I got an education in there, came out working at a restaurant, working in an oil change shop, trying to do little shit.
Yeah.
And I still hadn't learned my lesson. So I stole change at this oil change shop out of the ashtrays just to make a couple extra bucks. Got fired from my parole job. I should have gone back to prison, but I got this little modeling job, and I said I switched my job, and they believed it, whatever. So I wasn't making much money, but I was getting gigs at this modeling joint.
So, like,
I got into sales.
So with the modeling, I mean, so, like, right when you got out and you saw yourself in the mirror, I mean, you immediately went to the size you are now? Like, you got back in shape, or?
Well, right now I'm probably about as skinny as I have been in 20 years because my shoulder's been bothering me. I haven't been able to work out. But no, at that point I was 20 years old and I was huge, probably another 60 pounds what I am right now, and just really like prison buff, you know, big. I came out and I was just still working out and enjoying it and single and like, you know, bad boy rep and just enjoying the party life. But yeah. I couldn't because I was on parole. So it was like I had to kind of behave myself until I got off officially. But everybody's wanting to party with me, and girls and sex, drugs, and rock and roll was tempting me. Shakira was right there.
Yeah.
So got off parole by the skin of my teeth, and one of my modeling gigs was actually a sales thing. She flew me to California to do this fair, and I just crushed it. I've been making a little money modeling, but $20 an hour ain't nothing compared to a weekend in our industry. You know, on a good weekend, we can pull in some cash.
Yeah, that's totally. I mean, you can see the American dream unfold in and of itself over a weekend with what we do.
Yeah, and if you got the gift of gab and you enjoy chatting with people, it's just having a conversation all day.
That's all you got to do. I mean, it goes back to what you said earlier, right? Is like, it's about building that relationship. And while we're talking and conversing, I'm throwing in a sales pitch to where you're not going to feel so bad about buying this.
Right. You don't even know you're being pitched because yeah. We're just talking to you like we're just neighbors and, you know, standing in the driveway looking at a transmission talking about shit. That's how I pitch people.
Yeah.
Conversationally, not one of my pitches over 15 years has been the exact same wording as any other pitch. I will say that. I'm not a scripted dude.
Oh, I'm not either, dude. I tried to sell beard oil to Santa Claus over the weekend. And by the way, he is going to get a bag of coal.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's a bad boy. I'd probably be mad too, man, to be in, you know, to wear all that as hot as it was Sunday.
It was a beautiful day. That guy was sweating his old ass fanny off.
That's right. But anyway, back to you.
It's kind of crazy talking about myself. Honestly, I try to be an intelligent conversationalist, and the way I usually operate is when I'm trying to endear myself to someone, I ask them about themselves.
Yeah, come on with it. Yeah, come on.
Everyone's favorite subject is themselves, and if I ask people about themselves, they care about me, and they'll raise the esteem of someone else because they're interested. And so I always try to do that, have a good even exchange.
Yeah.
And I saw you guys out there, and y'all are more unique than my situation. I mean, you guys got a total niche. Mine's weird. Yours is weird. But, you know, you guys definitely have a little extra.
Yeah, a little extra sauce.
A little extra on the weird sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
So how did you get into your situation? I mean,
with
you,
that?
How did you meet your partner there, and how did you guys start your business?
Well, man, I met him through doing this podcast.
Really?
Yeah, so when I started this podcast, I moved back from Mobile, Alabama, not far from where you are now.
That's where I'm working there this weekend.
And I had lived down there for 6 years, and man, I went to school at the University of Mobile, and I got the degree there, and I got married, and I was beginning to work on my master's at NOBTS, so when you say Southern Baptist, I understand what you mean. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist.
Cultish, yeah. The backlash.
So, yeah. So, back home where I am now.
Not to say that their beliefs aren't legit. Jesus was the guy, and he was a good guy, and it's just people twist things too far. They take things too far. They take a good thing and they twist it bad, you know.
I'll say that, yeah. I'm with you there.
All the religions, I think, are good. Just let's not just exclude all the other religions. Like, everything is the same path to self-realization. You know, whichever way you need to get there is fine, but you don't need to be hating on everybody else's way.
I'm with that. I can anyway, respect that.
That's a good bunny trail, but back to the main course.
Yeah, and back home in Kennedy, where I am now, I had just lost my grandfather a little over a year before, and he was the guy that raised me. My parents went through a divorce when I was like 11, but they split when we were like 13. And I got an older brother. He's a year and a half older than me. But And so we ended up just living with them all throughout high school until I would go to college. And so my hero, the guy that raised me, had passed. And my grandmother was sick, and my dad had just had a stroke, and I was going through a divorce. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back home and help take care of the family, and I'm going to find my healing. I think I need to just get back to the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And a podcast was born, and that's what we're doing now. And that's how I met.
What's it called?
It, Porch Talk.
Porch Talk.
Yeah, because, and the root of it, why it's called that, is how it started was when I moved back here. I would just be sitting on a porch with a buddy that I hadn't seen in, you know, maybe a decade. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
catching
a guitar would come out and be like, dude, I just did this.
Okay.
And,
who plays guitar?
I do, and my buddies do.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a singer, so we need to jam a little.
Next time we get together, for sure.
I like someone to just play, and I like to just sing what's on my heart, like kind of blues style.
Oh, I can help you out there.
Yeah, and just go and have a fun little jam. Mm-hmm. So I've done that in probably 4 or 5 different countries: Thailand, Israel, what the hell is that one right next to Greece? Starts with an A. It's a little north of Greece. Across from Italy. It's really, really, it's in the Balkans. Anyway, like some Balkan country, I did it, like really Arabic, Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And then South America, a bunch of different places I've sang.
I've done
in Bangkok. I was in like a little 80s band, kind of cover band.
That's cool, man.
And dabbling in music throughout my life.
Cool, man. Yeah, I played in Guatemala quite a bit. I played in El Salvador, and I played in Chile.
¿Habla de español?
Dude, it is so weak now.
And plus, you got that southern accent, which is confusing to all people.
Oh, it is the absolute worst, brother. Because
my Chinese manufacturing company is like, yeah, we can understand English, except the people from Texas. I don't understand what they.
Yeah,
they're not even.
Oh,
I'm
telling you, it's like you know, you just hablo español, and then I'll be over here like hablo español.
Yeah.
Like, and, there's a twang on it.
Twang on it. Habla español.
Uh-huh.
You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah.
So, you guys have been podcasting for how many years?
This show is 2 years old, but this is how I met Munson. So, I never thought it was going to get off of my porch. And then the next biggest town, Columbus, where Munson & Brothers is based, you know, the company we were selling out of the van with, that's Ryan Munson's company. And some people started reaching out to me as, like, who they thought would be good for the show. And his name came up, and I looked him up and reached out to him. And after I had him on the podcast, I told him, I want to be a part of what you do because I believe in it. And it's been on ever since. And now I get to be the road dog.
Just kind of find interesting people throughout your lives and interview them. And,
yeah.
And that's the deal.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I like it, man. And I'll tell you what, throughout my travels, like every once in a while, you just, you know, for 99% of the backpacking trail around planet Earth is pretty well paved and easy to traverse if you got a smartphone and a couple bucks in your pocket. And it makes it real easy, and it makes it real generic, just like going to Disney World. It's not challenging, it's not dangerous, it's not exhilarating, it's not foreign, it's all very easy. And getting to places that it's a little bit difficult or foreign or hard is the challenge these days. So
I'll tell you what, dude.
You just have to cripple yourself on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'll tell you this, is like back to that Spanish just for a second. This was when I was a little bit more, I had Spanish as a minor at University of Mobile, which we all know a minor doesn't mean anything, but I did finish the course, but We had we were it was a mission trip. It was a Southern Baptist mission trip in Guatemala, and the guy that was driving the truck decided to tie the tent up. Like, he put the tent in the bed of the truck, and then it was pointing up toward the cab. And it caught a low-hanging power line, and it swapped back, and it hit a van behind us. And the driver looked over at me, and he said, Showtime, you said you speak Spanish, right? And I was like, brother, I'm about to do my best. And that guy got out talking, he got out talking 100 miles an hour. And
yeah, he did.
And, you know, he's upset, he's mad, and I would be too. And then he gets out and he sees a bunch of gringos, and they're like,
yeah.
slow down. And I finally get to understanding a little bit about what he's saying, because he just kept repeating himself, and I was like, okay.
Well, you know that word, yeah. Slow down, right?
Yeah.
Slowly?
Yeah.
Because it's the most popular song on the planet.
Was that?
Despacito.
That's it?
It's actually despacio. Is slowly. So, if you want to say more slowly, you say más despacio, por favor. More
there
slowly,
you go.
Please. Yeah.
So finally figured out what he was saying, and it just so happened that we were at our drive to where we would turn to go up back to the mission house. And I told him, I was like, in my broken Spanish, is follow us and we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And so he did, and then I was like, took him right to my translator, and I was like, we got an issue, here we go. And you know, turns out he was like, you can pay me off or we can go to Guatemala City and take care of this with the insurance. And we all opted, how much does he want? Because I don't want to spend all day in Guatemala City.
So what did the total end up being?
It wasn't bad. Like, I think American, it was
50
like three.
Bucks?
I think American, it was like, yeah, I think it was like 250.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little chunk, but that's all right. If it was your fault, that's legit.
And I'm sure that was paying him too.
Yeah, that's all right. I let people make their money. If I'm making money in life, which I am, and I feel like I'm almost cheating. It's so easy to do what we do sometimes. I don't mind paying full price. I don't mind tipping people. I mean, tonight, like at the gambling, you know, I knew I was going to lose that $100. So I just try to tip really extravagantly along the way, because that's about the only thing I'm going to have to show for it. Otherwise, it would all go to the house. And I'd rather see it in the person that I'm interacting with's hand than in the house's hand.
You're right about that, man. You're right about that. I believe in tipping, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, karma.
Yeah, man.
It hasn't been but maybe 4 years that I believed in it, but it's changed my timeline. It's made it so much longer. Reincarnation has made it so that I'm not in such a hurry to do everything, because I think it's just one and done here.
Yeah, sure. I like that.
You know, we've been brought up to believe that you got one shot at it here, and you go to heaven or hell, and you got to make it count.
That's right.
I believe you got to make it count, and I believe everything is counted, and that we're going to be judged and all that, but I think that it's just a matter of how fast are you going to get to
where you're going to be?
Level. You know, do you have to come back 10,000 times to get it right, or can you get it right in a few times because you did the right thing and you worked hard? I think this is the worst it gets. I think Earth is like boot camp for the soul. You got an eternal soul that's in this heaven next.
So we're talking Buddhism here, right?
Kind of a mix of Buddhism and Hinduism. I'd say more on the Hinduism if you had to throw it into a box.
Yeah.
It's not in a box, but I believe that, you know, those people come back here in order to hone their skills and to chisel their souls and steal it up. And then, you know, they are shooting for enlightenment. But you get a break in between, and you get to go and enjoy that bliss and no pain. I mean, we got these bodies. We know we don't have the hard drive to be able to learn all the subjects in the world or to be really an expert at more than a couple things in this 80 years we get. That's a ripoff, man. If this was the only shot we had at it, I mean, oh, I can throw a basketball and a hoop, and there, I'm done. Even Michael Jordan, he did a great thing. You know, he's famous, but all he did was throw a ball and a hoop. I mean, you could have 10,000 more lifetimes and pick 10,000 more subjects and still have not mastered everything. 80 years ain't nothing, man.
I'll tell you that.
There's got to be more to it.
Yeah, man. Okay, sure. I'll tell you this, though, man. It's, I mean, it goes back to just life in and of itself is, man, when I've traveled, and you've traveled more than I have, is when I see the way that I get to live my life, and when I travel, and I get to see the way that other people are living their lives, I hope so. You know what I mean? Because although they're not so captivated by technology, I mean, everybody talks about the social dilemma on Netflix and how social media and the internet has just like really ruined people's lives as far as being able to interact in public. Is, you know, you could go to these little towns in Guatemala and show a kid a Hot Wheels car and show them how to roll down a piece of tin. And there's a certain amount of joy that it doesn't seem to exist here in America anymore. It's almost like...
I think it's about the human interaction. And if you have technology to interact over, great. However you can connect with a kid or a person. But it's got to be 3D, real life, physical items and emotion from a body to a body, because that's the only time you can exchange energy. Hey, by the way, we're about to get a meteor shower at 10 o'clock tonight. Did you know that?
Did not know that. You got clear skies. Yeah, where so you are, we're cloudy.
Sure do. Yeah, it's been cloudy and rainy all day, but right now we got clear skies. So, I don't know. What time is it?
It's the same time. We're at 8:30.
So, in an hour and a half, it's going to peak.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've got a meteor shower coming. You better step out and look at that, because I we'll guarantee... Do.
I got a hell of a deck, and I live in a small town, so the sky is bright.
Right on.
You know what that's about, though. You're out in Colorado. You know about a night sky.
Yeah, I moved way off the grid, man. I'm in the mountains. I found this Catholic church for $45,000. I mean, I paid more for my truck than I did for my property. But it came with its own graveyard.
Cool.
It came with well rights, which may or may not have panned out, but we did sink a well into it, and it hit water. So now I got well water. I got solar we just put in during the pandemic here because I had nothing else to do. And a little
off the grid.
Change. So now I got it all off the grid. It's an A-frame mahogany wood, beautiful, gorgeous, like, apocalyptic structure. And I just, it's the fun factory, man. I got a basketball hoop in my living room. I got the pulpit. I smoke weed at the pulpit. You know, I got three confession booths, fully operational.
Oh,
it's good times and great oldies, my friend.
I'm telling you what, I might need to come up there and make a confession.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this about the graveyard. Are you familiar with the phrase foxfire? Okay, so, you know,
that's
like
a search engine, isn't it?
It is that.
That's Firefox, my bad.
Yeah, either way, I'll accept it.
But, well, thanks, man.
I know what you mean. But, out in graveyards, so back in the day, man, we would go, air quote, coon hunting, end air quote.
Sure.
And all it would be is, like, we would go turn our dogs loose, and we had this, like, gas mask, and we would just smoke it out, right?
The dog?
No, we wouldn't smoke the dogs out, but we would smoke ourselves out.
Oh, I smoked the dog out one time. We had this dog, Bogey, and we had a gas mask for him. But anyway, that's another conversation.
But we would end up, like, just stoned and, you know, parked at these graveyards. And you every now and then, what it is these, our dead bodies, you know, they put off gases. And eventually they creep up out of the earth. And it's highly flammable. I think it's methane or it's methane. And so I think it's in your farts, I think. Mm-hmm. But when
I've
it
heard a fart before.
When yeah, it, yeah when it comes up out of the ground, if everything is just right, it'll make just like when it finally escapes and hit oxygen, it'll form like a little, it like picture a hot air balloon, a flame.
Sure. little torch.
Yeah, a little. Just for a brief instant, and that is the best. And sure. we called it a foxfire. And you imagine
so
just being
you
out
go
there
to the grave with a Bunsen burner and just wave it around, or what was the process?
No, we were literally just sitting outside in our trucks facing the graveyard. Like the human interaction didn't have to happen. It happened naturally.
Oh, so it was just like you had these morgue farts blowing all over the graveyard by themselves?
Yeah, but it doesn't happen all the time. It's just like every now and then.
So it's like a shooting star.
Yes. Kind of you mentioned the graveyard, and I was like, I wonder if you ever just sit out on the deck and watch the graveyard.
I'll tell you what, man, I have a little flat roof on one end where there's a little addition, where there's a little kitchen. And I watch, it hangs over the graveyard and the western sky, so I get to watch my sunsets from there. And I've seen probably 30 shooting stars from there, and I've never seen a foxfire. So there you have it.
Like, I don't know. It might be a fresh grave thing. I don't know. I don't know how young, I don't
so
know.
So you've seen one for sure? It's not a wives' tale?
I'm not saying wives' tale. I'm saying high tale.
You've seen it?
I was high.
You've seen one.
I was high, yes. I've seen them.
Okay. So you've seen them high. Well, that's cool. It's not like you're out of your mind. I mean,
as seeing a UFO.
That's legit, though. UFOs have come to be pretty believable these days with camera phones and what have you. I'm pretty convinced there's UFOs, man.
And that's a conversation right there.
I mean, it's turn on the radio, man. There's other people already done that. We got a niche in another category because UFOs are overdone. Holy shit. There's a lot of UFOs. The technology is coming along on planet Earth here for the public to be able to see it. But it's been around a long time, and God only knows if it came from another planet or if it came from us. But either way, the technology is for sure out there and been around for a while.
Yeah. Well, man, let me ask you this. I want to go here with you for a second.
All right.
Is, man, tell me about surfing and how you got into it.
Okay. So I went to California for the Orange County Fair to sell a product that was a kitchen gadget. I was working for an old Jewish lady and just doing my shift every day. It was a 12-hour day, and you'd have a couple people. So one guy would do 6 hours, and the other would do 6 hours. So I'd do whatever for 6 hours. So I'd go and work. So I went to the gym. Obviously, I was into that. So I'd go to the 24-hour fitness there in Newport Beach. And then I stumbled on Huntington Beach, which was a pretty big touristy thing. It's like Surf City, USA. And I'd never been to the ocean, much less a surf spot. And I sat on that beach and I saw people surfing. And immediately I was like, okay, this appeals to me. I want, that's my shit.
Wow.
And the things that appeal to you in this life are not by accident. Quote me on that, because you should follow the things that appeal to you. Those are the things you're supposed to do. Those are the talents and the passions that we're blessed with. And so when you see that green light flash, you need to chase that with all your heart. And I couldn't help it. So I got me a little $70 Craigslist board, and it was a way more advanced tiny board than I should have gotten. And I fought it for a year. But every morning I'd wake up, I'd go to the gym, and then I'd go surfing. And after 30 days of that, I was hooked. And I've never been super good at it. I mean, I'm a skateboarder, snowboarder, have been all my life. But surfing has always been very scary, dangerous, and at the end of the day, didn't really get any injuries. So I get to have the story and the feeling of exhilaration without the injuries, like a lot of sports where, you know, like snowboarding, if you do something scary, the consequences are real. Like, it ain't water, it's ice, you know? That will injure you. So surfing is something I feel like I can do into my old age, even if I'm just longboarding and taking it easy. Always the surf spots are cheap and beautiful and perfect weather and beautiful women and just fun life. And so I moved there to Huntington Beach. As soon as I saw it, I sat there and I said, as soon as I can afford this, I'm moving here. That's my goal. So that was when I was maybe 23. And by the time I was 32, I could afford it. I had started my own business and had some money. So I moved out and I got myself an apartment, top story of a two, but like a bi-level. My garage was under me, and then it was like a duplex. So somebody was on the other side, but Huntington Beach, lived there for a couple of years. And I put on Craigslist this little ad that said, anybody who sucks at surfing and wants to learn, like, I'm going to put a little sign on the beach that says rookies and y'all can come and surf with me if you want, and we can learn together. So I went out every day, plunged my sign in and got myself a little California girl. And we had like 3 years of good sex, good fun, traveled with country, and she was a typical California girl, super just gorgeous, athletic, fun, emotional, you know the hot crazy scale.
Oh yeah.
So she was 100% hot and 100% crazy,
the unicorn.
So yeah, jealous, insecure, the whole bit. So ended up, after a few years, she really convinced me that being single is something that I can enjoy and not have to be in a relationship. So now I'm just kind of really enjoying my freedom. It's been 5 or 6 years. She's had a marriage and a kid, and just like every other one of my exes, they're all married up, houses, kids. And I don't think you have to really conform to that structure just because a lot of people are doing it. I think I'm one of those people that's going to end up just, cruising through life. I might end up with a partner someday, but I don't know, man. I married when I was younger and it didn't work out. I feel like I failed at that. And
yeah,
why try it again? There's a lot of other paths in life.
Yeah, dude, we align right there. I can't argue with one word from that. Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a quick, like, okay, this ain't working.
Yeah.
I can't be responsible for somebody.
It was crazy, you know. It was, after the dust settled, I realized I'm actually happier. You know?
Yeah, but you got to let that dust settle because there's a lot of dust.
Yeah, there's a lot of dust.
Yeah. But if you can get through that sandstorm, once you can see the horizon, it's beautiful.
Oh, it really is. It really is, man. And it's really freed me up to, traveling. And I mean, because I put this podcast on the road. And, I should have brought the podcast stuff to Corinth with us then, but...
All you need is a microphone and a internet signal, right?
Well, I got a whole setup. I got a computer and an interface that I use, but I'm about to order,
that's like 1 square foot in your in your truck that you just don't have, because you got to have the double grill top whip-de-doo. You guys are counting the square inch in that joint, huh?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Meanwhile, I'm looking at a 40-foot RV thing. And,
wasn't it Andy? Andy, I think he said he's into like Airstreams. Didn't he get an Airstream?
Ashtree?
No, Dave. He got an Airstream, right?
He bought an Airstream online, and it was just one of them Craigslist deals. He's gonna soup it up, but it's just kind of janky, and the guy's fixing it up so we can drag it home. But yeah, he. And for those of you who are listening, Dave is a guy in my industry. I've been bringing along and helping him start his business and manufacture his own product. I took him from salesman, where I was at when I started, to rocking out, making more sales than I am now. So we kind of travel together a lot. And we're building a pretty solid friendship. And his business is coming along. My business is rocking solid as ever. And just joining on expenses. It's nice to have a partner on the road, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like hanging out at that point. It's almost like making money while hanging out with your buddy.
Yeah, and we motivate each other, and we're competitive, both of us, so...
And I imagine so, man, because, I mean, that was the highlight. That's what, I mean, everybody talked about, like, other vendors when they came to us, is, like, you definitely have, like, the coolest and weirdest setup, But those guys in there are the best sellers.
Yeah, we try to be, I struggle with being too weird so and fitting in. Those two opposites work in different situations, and sometimes they don't. It's like, sometimes I try to fit in and wear jeans and a flannel, and then the people are pass you by because they want to see something different. They want a hook.
Yeah.
And then other times you got a real big hook and you're super weird, but then you're too weird and sensational, so they don't trust you, and they'll watch the show, but they won't buy. So it's, there's some balance there.
There really
is. You
need
a hook to get them in. But once they're in, you need to be the boy next door, super, super normal, trustworthy, local, whatever it happens to be, business owner, give them a story, appeal to their emotions. So, you know, get them in with the weirdness and then sell them with the normalcy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the go. That's the pitch.
I hired a bodybuilder one time, and he had a real good hook because people wanted to see his body, so they'd come up, but he was a really bad pitch man. He had a he couldn't close them. He had no personality. He was a nice guy, but he wasn't a salesman. And then, you know, this gay guy I hired is a friend of my girlfriend, and he was super funny and flamboyant and gay as hell.
Yeah.
Super gregarious, and I was like, he'd be great on the box. So I put him up, and he'd get people in once again with his hook was really strong, but then he was so flamboyant and fake that you know, they didn't take him seriously or his product.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some balance there, and that's what I go into with my blog, is all of these nuances in the pitch industry and the trade show industry, whether you're selling a service or a product. I have been doing this 15 years, and I have hundreds of hours of video that I've analyzed and just experienced selling different products at different price points, and I've discovered a lot of little tells that people do without knowing it, that pretty much you can tell within a couple seconds if someone is interested and they are a potential buyer or not. And that way you can weed out the people who are not, so that by the time you're done with your pitch, whether it's a couple minutes or whatever it is, the person in front is the person that you know is going to buy, and they're jonesing to buy it. And then other people follow, like lemmings. And if they see money out, whether it's cash or card, and being exchanged, immediately you skip the whole first process of establishing rapport, because they trust you because they see other people buying it.
Yeah.
So they know that they trusted you enough to buy it, so they automatically already trust you. They just want to see the product. So you can pitch without any reservations, and it's easy because you already have that trust.
Hence,
so that's the role.
Hence the clear bags, right?
Yeah. The clear bags, 22 cents for a plastic bag is the best investment I ever made for my advertising budget.
It's like people are already buying it, dude.
So I might have worked hard the first day to really get those, you know, in the morning, the first couple hours, you work real hard to knock out those sales, and you have to build rapport with every customer. But then once your product is walking around and people see, they come up to you asking, what is that? I've seen a lot of people buying it, and they already trust you. They got the rapport. And yes. At that point, they want a good thing. They want to just know that they're getting a good deal, and they don't even have to see usually half the pitch, and they're already... like, okay, shut up, give it to me. Give me one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the pitch industry is so much different than normal sales, because it's not a logical decision that they're making based on research. It's an emotional decision. And if you can, like I said, be that chameleon and make them comfortable in 30 seconds, they'll give you $20 just for being cool, just for giving them a good feeling.
That's it.
And if they get a cool product, that's a bonus. But you created an energy, and your 10-foot bubble, or however big it is, depending on how much noise there is in the venue, you control that with your energy, with your power.
Mm-hmm.
If your power is greater than the energy around you, then you can pull them into your energy color or feeling. Now, if somebody else's power is greater than yours and you feel that coming on, then you conform to theirs. So this is a constant, you know, re-leveling and reassessing on a second-by-second basis who's in front of you, what are they feeling, how do they want to be treated, what do they need?
Yeah.
So that's what we do, and that's what the
that's
the
just it, you know. It was you know, the chicks that were across the sidewalk from us on that front lawn, they weren't even selling anything. They were just trying to get word out about what they were about to do.
What were they about to do?
I think they have a boutique in town, and the mother, she has like a real estate firm, and like they do a lot of rental properties.
So they were just chatting people down, getting their word out.
That's it. And so what?
$125. That's worth it.
Right. And so our big game is, and like how I draw people in is like if it's me and Moonson, is I'll throw the reel, and when I get them reeled in, he'll make the sale.
He's the closer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's that legit.
I know a lot of people that hire a closer, and that's just their job.
No. It's his deal. Like, I'm the hired opener.
Got you. So you're doing, you get him in.
Yeah.
Be weird, and then he's the normalcy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great combo.
And you know, they were working with us because like I would start hollering like across the way, over there by their boot, "Hey man, nice face jacket," and you know the guys just what?
Yeah.
And they's like, he meant he likes your beard. And you can just see his eyes light up, and he just walks over, and you know Munson gets up, he gets ready, and then I tell another joke, I make everybody laugh, and by this time we got a crowd, and then I let him do his thing.
And that is probably the biggest post and the biggest thing in our type of sales is humor. If you can make them laugh, even just one little crack to let them know that they know that y'all are the same. You know, if you could laugh about something that's insinuated or just whatever joke it is, That's the key, because a serious pitch the whole way through may very well logically make sense, and it makes sense for them to give you that money.
But it don't connect.
If they don't have that love and feeling.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And music. Oh, man, I usually play disco. If I have.
We bring a guitar sometimes. Disco. We didn't bring a
guitar. Yeah, that's a good hook, too. That's a good hook,
We didn't bring a guitar this time, though. But, yeah, we'll get up there, and, like, if we can't get people to us, I mean, we'll give a reason. You know?
Yeah, there's a reason why Walmart's got its own radio station. When you're in there, you know they got the big speakers in the front now that are busting out just like fun shopping music? You ever go to Walmart and hear that shit? Just
I was at Walmart today, and they were doing it.
They're busting out some like 90s hip-hop, like some fun stuff, and you're just like, yeah, I'm about to buy me some apples.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like music. I mean, you got to incorporate as many of the senses as you can. So I usually will tell them, hey, come, you know, give it a push, try it, feel the quality of it, you know, throughout my pitch. I'll have them touch it. And with the coronavirus, it's been hard because people don't want to touch it. So I got to make a joke, and I say, here, come give it a try. Oh, hang on a sec. Let me get the virus off it real quick.
And oh, yeah.
I wipe it off in front of them, and then I hand it to them. So they laugh, and then they take it. But otherwise, if I just say, hey, here, come give it a try, like right away, they're not coming up to try it because, one, psychologically, people just won't because they feel obligated as soon as they come in. So you don't want to do that right away. You got to do that, like, after you've gotten them in and they feel a little comfortable. A lot of people make that mistake is they say, hey, come try it. Come sit down. Take a break. You know, whatever it is, these massagers or whatever it is. Like, if someone gives you their time and they stop and deviate and walk towards you and you put any kind of talking or acting or sales effort in, they feel obligated to give you money for that.
They do.
And they know that, so that's why it's hard to stop people.
That's it.
So I always try to stop people on, and instead of stopping them, I try to have them swing in. So I get them about 10 feet earlier than most people do. That's why I place my booths away from other vendors so I can busy like a bartender, but then just accidentally kind of pop up and, oh, hey, check this out. And I don't ask them a question. I never ask people a question. I say a statement. I got this thing I'm going to show you and blah, whatever it is, but I assumptively just do it and make them feel like an asshole if they don't watch it, because this is the thing. This is what's happening, and this is what I'm doing. No, do you want to see this? Because immediately they say no, because they don't want to be obligated. The obligation is the thing that I'm trying to avoid. I'm like, 10-second demonstration. Even if you don't like it, it's just fun to see. Consider it a commercial in your day. Like, whatever. Just make it funny, self-deprecating humor, whatever it is, so they don't feel the pressure.
Yeah.
And then once they're in your web, you can put as much pressure as you want on them because you already got them in there. You got their undivided attention.
Yeah.
Whatever your closing technique is, you put it on them. Everybody's got their thing. Everybody's got a different physical body, a different voice, and a different style. If I was a big fat person with a super high funny voice, I would use that to my advantage.
Right.
If I was a super hot chick with big tits, I would use that to my advantage. Like, everybody's got a hook built in.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, just, oh man, I could go on for days about, like, we had this mall for 2 months of last year, for November and December. And a lot of people from Corinth remembered us doing it. But we tried to bring that same festival energy to the mall.
Did you bring your Volkswagen in the mall?
No, but like the weirdness and like the cat calling. We call it beard calling. Yeah, yeah. And dude, it was off putting. And then we had to like figure out, you know, it was like, well, we got to re-engage. The whole atmosphere had changed. It's because, yeah, like,
sometimes you got to reset and just go back to the basics.
Yeah.
Remember, your energy is the one you're trying to infiltrate. You don't want to be conforming to others' energy too much. And sometimes the environment around you is so powerful that you're already starting, like, way below even. And you have something to overcome.
That's the mall. That's the mall. Yeah.
Whether it's some, like, weirdo neighbor that's got something distracting or something you have to overcome, loud music or whatever it is that's distracting.
Yeah.
You know, you could have a 3D projector booth next to you like I had one time. They were shooting a projection onto the floor in the aisle, and everybody was coming up and standing in it because it was touchscreen, but it was visual. I was screwed, man. My little kitchen gadget was nothing compared to their fucking show.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to analyze and adapt.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Well, man, let me ask you this. Tell me about the best wave you've ever caught. Where was it at?
Last year, I was in Bali, which is the surfing mecca of planet Earth. And I was wanting to go to the Philippines for a week during my month in Bali. So this was December, late December, probably 20th. And I planned on being back in Bali for the New Year, so I had a flight booked a couple days before New Year, whatever. So I hopped on a plane out to Manila, land in Manila, and then I just wanted to go to the best surf place, and it was between Boracay, which is the party, super party place, also surf spot, but really known for their partying, and then another place called Siargao, which was epic waves. They have, like, this awesome Cloud 9 wave and a couple other waves, but they're a really remote island, very peaceful, very meditative. So I opted for the meditative one, and I went to Siargao, this remote island. I had to take a plane ride from Manila to Cebu City, which is a ghetto ass island, but they have a boat that goes out to Siargao, and so that's the only way to get there. They don't fly. So I get to Cebu City, and I'm thinking, man, I want an adventure. This stuff is too easy. So I turned off my phone, and or I didn't buy a SIM card, whatever the thing that would cripple me was in the airport. I think they were selling SIM cards, and I was like, nah, screw that. I'm just going to just wing it. I know what the name of my hostel is, and I'll just figure it out. So I hop in one of these little Colectivo deals, and a jeepney. They call them jeepneys in the Philippines. And it's basically like a 40-year-old school bus decorated with every piece of shit you could find to glue on it, like horns and chromed out weird, like, you know, like garden gates, and just everyone has a theme and they're all named and personalized and spewing out huge puffs of black diesel smoke, and people are hopping in and out, and it's not really, you got to be able to know which one's going where and be local in order to ride them, but they're like 2 cents, you know, they basically pay you to ride these things, and there's 55 people in it, you know, it's always like jammed in there. So I'm at the airport and there's the taxi, which I could have paid for, or the jeepney. And I didn't know where the jeepney was going. I was like, eh, fuck it. I just want to have a little adventure. Let's see what's up. So I'm up in the back of this thing, and it ends up in traffic jam going the wrong way. I don't know what the fuck. So finally, and so I get in the thing, and I'm the only white person in there, and everybody's eyeing me, and Filipinos speak English.
Mm-hmm.
They all speak English, but none of them would speak English to me. And so I knew that they didn't like me and they didn't want me in there. And I got my big backpack on and my America scarf that I always wear, American flag. So after 15 minutes of that, I'm sweating bullets. I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here. We're not going anywhere. I'm just looking at these people. So I pay them their 25 cents, hop out, and I'm on the middle of the street in the dark, and it's raining in Cebu City, Philippines. I got no cell phone. And I kind of knew the general direction. I knew I had to go up this bridge, and I saw the bridge, and I walked towards it. And the thing's like a 2 mile bridge, and it's an arc bridge, so the first mile is uphill.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, well, fuck it. So the traffic jam was all over the bridge, so I end up walking this bridge, and my steps are twice as big as every Filipino. So I'm cruising by these people. Everybody's looking at me like, what the hell is this weirdo doing? I get a little sweaty, get to the crest, take a break, walk down, and then on the other side, I see why there's a traffic jam. It's 2 feet of water, flood, flash flood. So cars are stopped, everybody's honking, like the streets are flowing, and the sidewalks are buried. The only things that are outside of the water are these business fronts where all these like kids and students and people, pedestrians that would be on this main street are standing and watching. And I'm like, well, I gotta get to my hostel. It's late, I'm tired, so I'll... whatever. So I just walked my ass through this 2 foot deep water in the street, and I'm just plugging away against the current up this main street that's got just cars stopped on the sides, and I'm the only one walking, and people are hooting and hollering, and who's the white guy, just like whatever, and kids and begging for money. It started getting a little more ghetto, a little more shitty, a little more poor. And I'm like, son of a bitch, this is getting a little bit, I don't know. Got that bad feeling, you know, a little tired and not as much in the adventure anymore. And then I kept going towards my direction, and finally, after like a couple miles, and I'm just at my wit's end, some guy picks me up, and after another hour of miscommunicating, because he doesn't speak very good English, we finally get to my hostel. And so my hostel is like home, thank God. They give me a drink, and it's a nice little atmosphere, and I go upstairs, and I, holy shit, relax, take a shower, go up to this jacuzzi party area on the rooftop, and I'm getting directions on how to get to this surf mecca.
Yeah.
And this guy, Max, this German guy, convinces me to take a detour. So I go to Bohol, another island, the next day, and then come back to Cebu City just to do a little, one of the seven wonders of the world, go see these symmetrical mounds. They're like tiny mountains, and there's 1,000 of them, and they're all exactly the same in this one island. So I went and saw that, came back, and then I got the boat to Siargao, where the biggest waves on Earth are. So I asked on the plane, this dude, I was all the way in the latrine seat, and there was a surfer-looking dude across from me in the other latrine seat, and we had our own row. So I was like, hey, man, what do you know? And you know any spots? And he was really, like, a typical surfer, like, really douchey, and, like, he's too cool for school, and he thinks I'm a kook, and he thinks I suck, and, like, I'm just a tourist. And I could tell his attitude. So he told me, like, one wave, and then he went back to his thing. I was like, okay. But the recommendation that he gave me ended up being the best wave I ever hit.
Huh.
So I'm on the island, and I go to get a rental board, and it's like $2, you know, and an instructor, another $6. So they tell me, this is your instructor, and the guy doesn't speak English. So we kind of universal body language. He gets me aboard, and we hop on the scooter and get out to the launch area, and he's like, it's a little late for that wave. Why don't we go to this other wave? And I was like, well, I'm kind of intermediate. I'm not a pro, just so you know, but I can't really 100% communicate it to him. So he's just like, yeah, it's all good. I'll take care of you. So we hop on a boat. We wade out into the water about waist high with our surfboards. We get into this little canoe with a motor, and it has two stabilizing buoys on either side so it doesn't tip. And he throws our surfboards into the net, and my instructor is this 100-pound, dripping wet, good-looking dude, ripped, you know, typical island guy, really, really haughty, and not asking my name, not bothering. He's just smoking a cigarette, whatever, and I'm being manly and cool, so I'm like, all right, fine, you know, so I'm looking and doing my thing, and then he's doing his thing, talking to the boat driver. We get out to this place in the middle of the ocean where there's a wave that just comes up because of a formation underneath the water, and it just shoots out of nowhere. But you get 2 hours in there, and there's no beach, there's no safety, there's just, like, drop you off, you surf. If you die, like, you're just another person that doesn't catch their flight home. So immediately upon landing, you know, I'm trying to get my shirt on, my board shirt and my surfing shirt, so I don't get a board rash. And he's already in the water, and he paddled all the way to the wave, and I was just hopping in, and I didn't really know it that well, so I got caught in this lip that I didn't realize was powerful like that, and it just pulled me through the washing machine. It took me a solid half hour to even get back to him where we could start, and I was already toasted, just worn out. And this wave was the size of Trump Tower. It would start huge and just big and mean. And then towards the end of it is where people could even fathom catching it. And however deep you went in to catch your wave was how good you were. So the locals would catch it more inside, and the beginners would start way outside. I was just on the way outside where it could pull you in if you don't know how to duck dive well. Which, mm-hmm. on a wave that size, I don't know how to duck dive that well. Anyway, so I'm tired as hell, and I couldn't tell the difference between go and no, because he kept saying it, but I couldn't. And so I thought he said go, and I went again, and I missed it. And he was actually saying no, and so it was another half hour. And for me to, you know, get back and paddle against these waves, I got put through the laundry. I'm super tired and scared and just beat down and frustrated, and it was just really, really bad. And then he's, you know, I got a minute to catch my breath, and then this chick comes up, and she's in a bikini, and she weighs 100 pounds or whatever the hell, and she just rips this wave and crushes it. I'm like, fuck that. If she can do it, I can do it. And so he's like, go! And I hit one, and I jumped up and wobbled my knees, and I just dropped from the top of this wave to the bottom, and I hung on, and I rode for probably another 5 or 6 seconds. This monster beast of a wave. And then I just pulled off back and to the left over the back of the wave so that I didn't go through the laundry for a third time, because I was pretty toast at that point.
Right.
But that, I would say, was the best wave I ever caught.
Hell of a story, man.
It's not over. So after this session, the sun's going down, and I'm stubborn. I want to catch another one. So I'm the last one there, and our boat's like, we got to go. Your time's up. So we hop in the boat, and halfway back, the thing starts puttering, and I see these guys speaking in their language, and I can't understand what they're saying, but I think that the boat's dying. And so they decide, in my interpretation, to go to another place where it would be easy for us to paddle in if the boat did die. So we end up making it, but by the skin of our teeth, and in a place where we didn't start out at, and I don't speak these guys' language, and we end up in this shitty little, like, shanty town, just built out of tin shit and extra pieces of wood, and just like over a dock.
Mm-hmm.
Really ghetto, like tons of Filipinos just in like shitty, half dressed and dirty and smoking cigarettes and all talking at the same time. And I'm a little uncomfortable. And my driver and my surf instructor both disappeared. And I'm like, fuck, what do I do?
Yeah.
So, I just bum a cigarette and just kind of smoke a cigarette, because that's something socially I can do that makes me blend in, and if I'm in a situation like that. And then they find me again, and they're like, okay, hop on. So they sandwich me on the scooter, and there's three of us on the scooter. And to get back to the mainland, it was a dock as wide as a truck with maybe three or four 2x4s in between joists that were not nailed in. So you're on these 2x4s with 20 feet fall into the water below you on a motorized scooter with three people going 1 mile an hour, wobbling, laughing, talking, smoking. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna fucking die.
Yeah.
And then he said something in Spanish, and I was like, habla español? And he was like, sí, güey. And I was like, what the fuck? So we start talking and getting along, and he ended up being my instructor for the rest of the time. But I could speak Spanish and he could speak Spanish, and it ended up being amazing. So, you know, we started talking about pool and billiards, and we ended up playing together that night, and he introduced me to a whole bunch of people and got me really into the local experience that I wanted. But it took that to get to it. I had to go through something.
Yeah.
Through a traumatic experience where I had to trust someone. And once you go through something with somebody, then you can build that trust in a relationship. And that's what I try to do, is just get myself into as much shit as possible so that I can bond with people around planet Earth and have a story to tell.
Hell yeah, and you've told a hell of a story tonight.
That's the best wave I ever caught.
That's what's up, man. Well, dude,
Have you ever surfed?
Huh?
Have you ever surfed?
I have not, man. I want to. I'll tell you this.
Okay.
Well,
I'll tell you what, man. I will. I'll teach you how to surf if you'd like.
I ain't gonna turn you down on this.
Okay. Where is your range of travel? I mean, are you mostly local here, or do you kind of go all around the U.S.?
Mainly southeast. I guess East Coast would be better than the Gulf Coast as far as waves, right?
What about San Diego? Is that something you might be interested in?
I could do that.
Because I've been hankering for a trip to California lately, and I got a place for us to stay in San Diego, which is a fancy place. But if you got a place to stay, they got great waves, you know, beautiful women and sunshine every day. So maybe we should get down on that. But we'll chat about that here in a while.
For sure, man. I'm definitely down for that. Definitely down. That'd be dope. Well, man, I'd love to have you back on. I don't want to keep you for too much more. It's been an hour.
Yeah, man. I'd appreciate your conversationality. And like I said, it's definitely something different for me. I write a lot and keep a lot of videos and journal, but I don't know what to do with it all.
Yeah.
So it's nice to tell a story or two from time to time. So definitely love to be back on your show whenever you'd like, man.
Cool, man. Well, RJ, thank you so much, man. We're out of here.
Cheers.
All right. News and notes. Thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, I would ask that you would rate and review the show on whatever podcast app it is that you listen to on. It helps as far as getting the word out. It makes it more searchable and findable. Share it on your social media. Tell a friend. Apart from you, that's literally all I have. I can only do so much. So thank you in advance. The opening song that you heard was Man Downtown by Taylor Hollinsworth off his latest album, Country Visions. Now, I got a website, www.porch-talk.net, worldschool.net. Check us out there. Find us. You can contact us there. Find us on social media. We're on everything. Write us. Let us know how we're doing. Gonna walk it out right now with Modern Convenience. So, so modern. Peace out.
the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.